Well, we begin the digging into the past. We looked at looking back and unpacking last week. We talked about hitting some Class 5 rapids. We're going to begin that this morning. We're going to be looking back at Dad. Remembering Dad is where we're going today. That's my great-grandpa. It's actually holding my uncle instead of my dad. But looking back at Dad. Last week we talked about unpacking and digging into the past to root out the issues causing problems that are in the present. Most of us don't want to do this because we like just the past, so let the past back there. Don't deal with it. However, unless we deal with the past responsibly, the past oftentimes will deal viciously with us in the present. We have an old home, and I gave this illustration last year, so those of you who are here, I'll beg your pardon for hearing it again. We had a home that was built back in the 1840s, 1850s, and of course back then there wasn't running water in the homes, but then it was added later, and so our sewer system was patched together and added later, and we bought this old place 38 years ago. And it had an old cast iron sewer pipe going across the back of the basement. And everything looked great to me as far as I was concerned. But you know, over the years, we added some things to it, and we put in some PVC pipe, connected it with a rubber boot. But you know, cast iron deteriorates. And after a while, I started seeing things ooze through. It was just getting little bubbles on it. And after a while, it started dripping. And after a while, you started smelling something that wasn't so pleasant. But you know something? I kept on trying to patch that and patch it and patch it. You know why I didn't want to? Who wants to? That's cast iron. It's down in the basement. It's miserable. And then it went through a big old stone wall and went underneath our wraparound porch and out into an old ancient septic tank. And I knew the problem was there. And it kept on giving us problems. The toilet didn't want to flush right, and every now and then you'd smell it. And I kept on patching it and dumping junk down the drain. And then finally I actually started digging it out. But I got so far, and I go, you know what? I'm going to have to tear the porch apart to get to this. I got to tear the floor up. And the porch was in good shape. I built it. I liked it there. But, you know, to really take care of the problem, this problem wasn't going away, and I knew it wouldn't go away until I finally, and, you know, finally I did. I tackled it. And it was just as messy, maybe a little bit worse than what I anticipated. But when I got into that thing, it was so deteriorated, and it was so clogged. I couldn't believe it. And then I really ended up messing up the porch while I was in the process, because I had to dig everything up. But, you know, if I wouldn't have dealt with it, we'd still be dealing with the odors, and we'd still be dealing with the problem. And that had been put there many years before I ever came on the scene. But I had to deal with it. And the same thing is true with our past. It's like, you know, some of us, we want to get into it, and we dig down there, and we hit the pipe, and we go, oh, there it is, and then we cover it back up. And we never get to the root problem. We never get to the core issues. Well, We want to ask each of you, and myself as well, to dig a little deeper until the pipe is completely exposed, and then even to dig up the pipe and maybe clean it out or replace it with some good stuff. It's not going to feel good, and as men, we're wired to fix things, aren't we? That's what we do. We fix stuff. But this morning, I'd just like to encourage you for now, don't try to fix it. Just try and find the problem. Just be willing to dig. Lay that fix-it mode aside and just be content to dig down and find out what the problem is. And we're going to need some tools. I needed a digging iron. I needed a shovel. I needed a pick. And you know, we're going to need some tools, but we're going to give you some tools in the next several weeks here to use with the wounds that we're going to, that were mentioned last week, that we're going to be looking at. Men, there's something very important for us to realize. There are three coping modes that we as men and people in general go into. And these three coping modes will keep you from experiencing freedom. They'll keep you from finding the answers. Number one, denial. Hey, I'm fine. I don't have a problem. It's my wife. I don't have a problem, it's you. I don't have a problem, it's my children. You know, denial will keep us from ever finding the problem. The next coping mode that we go into is blame. I did this. This was me big time. I often said to myself mostly, I didn't really say to her, but I would say, you know, if only my wife would treat me like I deserve to be treated, our marriage would be great. You never did that, did you? Aren't you glad that you're more mature than that? But I did that. Well, if only my wife would treat me like I deserve to be treated, our marriage would be great. Wow. I could be a good missionary if it wasn't for these natives. Did you ever hear that one? I could be a good parent if it wasn't for my children. I could be a good husband if it wasn't for my wife. Or I could be a good pastor if it wasn't for the lay people. No, you see, that doesn't work. Blame doesn't work. And then thirdly, excusing. Well, I'm so busy. It's the financial pressure. That's why I am the way I am. Hey, do you know something? All the reads are that way. That's the way that's the way we are. No, it doesn't work. That's simply excusing. Denial, blame, excusing will keep us from healing. We'll never get there, men. We'll never get there. As we dig down and we find the pipe and you dig all around it, you might say, well, hey, this isn't the problem. Well, hang in there. We'll get to it eventually. We're going to be dealing with five different wounds, the father wound, the mother wound. You think, mother wound? Who has a mother wound? Wait and see. Wait and see. When I first looked at that one, I go, mother wound, that's silly. Boy, was that me. Okay. The all alone wound. Men, we all struggle to a great deal with being lonely, the all alone wound. The lack of manhood vision, huge. And then the heart wound, which we were all born with. And we're going to be dealing with these five issues. But by the time we get through all those five of those, you're going to find yourself in one of those, or maybe all of them. And you're going to find some things that you struggle with and need to be dealt with. You know, we're all there, and see if I can get the right direction here. We can't get to where we are without some kind of wound. And Satan wants us wounded, and he wants to keep us there. And there's a reason why. First of all, we're all born with a heart wound, where we are self-centered by nature. We try to be our own God. We try to give our own answers. And so we all have this heart wound. Every single one of us do. But you know, then as we live life, other wounds are added to it by this person or this experience or our father or mother or grandparents or whatever. Wounds are added to it. And those wounds exacerbate or they magnify the original sin wound, the heart wound. And even if we get healed from the sin wound, if we haven't dealt with the woundedness that has come from other people and deal with them responsibly, it causes us to be self-centered. And men, this will be dealt with later on as we deal with the heart wound, but I just want to pass on something that's crucially and vitally important, and it's this. You remember the passage where Jesus says, many will come to me in that day and say, Lord, Lord, haven't we, and then he lists three things. Haven't we cast out demons? In your name. Haven't we prophesied? In your name. Haven't we done many wonderful works? In your name. So they're calling him Lord. They're believers. They're doing it in the name of Jesus. That sounds biblical. But what does Jesus say? But then I will say unto them, depart from me, ye workers of iniquity. What is iniquity? In the scriptures, that in that Greek word, it's anomia. Nomia is law, a is without. Without law. It's when we are refused to come under the governing power of anybody but ourselves. It is the initial sin nature. And we can identify it very, very well when we go to the Old Testament, where it says in Isaiah 53, verse 6, it says, all we like sheep have gone astray. Everyone has turned to his own way. Every one of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord laid upon him the iniquity of us all. You see, and Jesus, and it's interesting in David in the Psalms, he says, Father, forgive me of my sins and the iniquity of my wrongdoings. Isn't that interesting? He put sins and iniquity in the same passage. You see, iniquity is going our own way. Satan wants us wounded. He don't want us healed because, and here's the reason why. When we are wounded, it causes us to be self-centered. It causes us to be self-centered. You see, a wound is an emotional wound or a wound from a father, a mother, a grandparent, or anybody else. A wound like that is an emotional wound or a heart wound is very similar to any other wound we would experience. And men, you probably haven't gotten here without getting yourself beat up pretty badly one time or another, whether you smashed a finger or sliced something open or you had major surgery or whatever. But all of us, we've had problems, whether it's a bad headache or a toothache or whatever. Whenever you hurt physically, do you recognize that it makes you self-centered, self-focused? Last week, we had revival meetings. And for, I don't know when I got it, but sometime at the beginning of the week, I got a piece of dirt in my eye. You ever get a piece of dirt in your eye? Do you know how hard it is to listen to the preacher when your eye just hurts and waters and just keeps on aching? And I actually carried a bottle of murine, and I just kept on putting it in. I couldn't get the dirt out. Finally, it finally went. I should have went to the doctor, I guess. But finally, it went away. But do you know when your eye hurts, when something's in your eye? It caused me to be so self-focused because, man, it was just an irritant. It was just always there. That's the way a wound is. When a heart wound exists, it causes us to be self-focused. And guess what? Self-centered people are not fun to be around. Do we recognize that? And so you see, Satan wants to keep us wounded because if we're wounded, we can't be the godly father. We can't be the husband that our wives need us to be. We can't be the men. We can't experience authentic manhood because we have this wound that's causing us to be self-focused and self-centered. God wants us healed. He wants our heart cleaned up and healed. Why? Because if we're healed, then we can give love and we can receive love. We can just keep on, you see, we can keep on giving and receiving love and we have a heart that's healed. But if we're self-focused, all we can think about is our own self. Boy, I'd be a good husband if it wasn't for my wife. You see, that's the way it is. That's the way it works. God wants us healed. He actually wants us wounded and healed. Because if we're wounded and healed, then we have empathy for those others who are experiencing woundedness. He wants us to experience healing so that we are healthy and that we're whole. You know, these wounds show up in many different ways. Do you remember, you all do. Remember the Amish school massacre? Okay. Mr. Roberts, well, there was problem somewhere, wasn't there? It was huge. It was huge. And the devastation and the impact, that'll impact families for generations. Because of one man's not knowing how to deal with his past. And his past dealt so viciously with him. Man, if we don't deal with our past will deal viciously with us, and it will impact our families, our children, our grandchildren. In fact, back in Exodus 30:34, God says, I am a jealous God, and I visit the iniquities of the fathers upon the children to the third and the fourth generation. Guess what? Our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren will deal with our lack of woundedness, our lack of healing, if we don't deal with our past. But we can deal effectively with it, and we can heal, and we can ask God to stop the passing on of this garbage, and the next generations, instead of being hurt and wounded by us, can be blessed. That's what this is all about, man. That's what it's all about. You remember Jeffrey Dahmer? I think it was out in the Chicago area. He killed people, he dismembered them, and he ate them. That sounds like fun, don't it? Boy, there was something wrong, something deeply, deeply wrong. Well, you know, some of us, and we remember those extreme cases. That's the ones that just jump out to us. But you know what? I was one. I was creating problems in my own home, in my own family, in my own lives, in my own church, because I wasn't dealing with some of the issues that I needed to deal with. And maybe mine weren't extreme, but to some people in my life, they were extreme. Some people in your life, it's extreme too. Some of us are going to be looking at this from the view of a son, and you're going to be considering your father. Some of us are going to be viewing it as a father and saying, do you know what? How have I been as a father to my sons, to my daughters? So all of us can view it from one way or another. Here's a quote by Jeffrey Dahmer, and so I wasn't there to see him. You see, we have an absent father here. Lionel Dahmer says, I wasn't there for my son. I wasn't there to see him as he began to sink into himself. I wasn't there to sense that he might be drifting toward that unimaginable realm of fantasy and isolation that it would take nearly 30 years to recognize. Didn't happen overnight. It came from an absent father. It came from a disconnected father. It came from Jeffrey not having a dad who spoke into his life and said, son, here's a vision for life. Here's something bigger than yourself. He wasn't there. And as our society breaks down, we're going to keep on seeing the more dramatic problems that occur because of absent fathers, dads that aren't there. We just don't end up doing the unimaginable things overnight. There's causes and there's reasons for this. And men, this is not a witch hunt for dads. I want you to know that. This is not saying, my dad was bad. No, I look at my father, and my father had some real problems in his life. But guess what? His dad did too. And so did his dad before him. I'm not blaming my dad. I'm just simply saying, you know what? Here's some causes. And if you don't find a cause, how can you ever apply a solution? But if you find a cause, you can deal with it. You can deal with it responsibly. God wants us to deal with things responsibly. And then we can heal. Then we can move on. We want to dig around. We want to dig down and find the pipe. We want to find the causes and the reasons. And I'd encourage you, men, look forward to the process. Even though I didn't look forward to changing that pipe. I didn't look forward to digging down and replacing everything. But you know what? I look forward to the end result. I know now, and I put that together, I think, well enough and right enough that I don't have to worry about that for years. Maybe for the rest of my life. Because I did it right. Let's do it right. Let's deal with this. And let's delight in the process because it's going to revolutionize our relationships. It's going to change our futures. Children living with biological father, children living apart from biological father. Look at that. 1960, 82.5% were living with their biological father. 17.5% apart. But look what happens in 1990. Look how it drops to 61.7% to 38.3%. 38.3% not living with their biological father. Now, are you observing something? These figures are 20 years old. This is 2010. Where do you think these are today? I don't have the current figures, but I have an idea. We're getting up there close to 50. All you got to do is talk to a public school teacher, and you're going to find out that there's a huge percentage of students that they have that are not living with both biological parents. Huge. This is a problem that's getting larger. Society is deteriorating. Relationships are deteriorating. Men, it's happening in the church too. In the church, it shouldn't be happening in the church, but it is. I am so grateful. You guys excite me. I am pumped. When I talk to people about encouraged men, I am pumped. I'm excited about it because I believe that we have to deal with things according to biblical principles and truth so that things can change and alter. When I think of the futures of you and your families and your children's families and your children's children's families, things can be different because of you sitting here and you saying, I want to find the problems. I'm going to deal with them. I'm going to be different. We're going to change this. By the help and the grace of God, I'm going to be a different man. I'm going to be a different husband. I'm going to be a different father. There's answers. There are answers. David Blankenhorn, I'm not quite ready for that. David Blankenhorn, he wrote The Fatherless America. Listen to what he says. As a father, a man is not perfect, but he's good enough to be irreplaceable. Men, we're not talking about perfection. We aren't going to be perfect. I never will be till glory. But we're good enough to be irreplaceable. There can't be anybody else but you, Dad, in your home. As a dad, as a husband, as a father on the premises, his children need him and he strives to give them what they need every day. He knows that nothing can substitute for him. Nothing. Either he is a father or his children are fatherless. He would never consider himself not that important. And as I look at the scripture there, the glory of sons is their father. Wow, men, think of that. That's not just an empty statement. That's a statement from God. And here's what he's saying. He's saying, this is my design, that sons would look to their dads and say, that's my daddy. That's my daddy. I remember a number of years ago at Ebeling's, we used to play softball with some of the other, like Dutch Way Farm Market, and we played it with Martin's Appliance, and we would play the different businesses in our area had teams, and we would get together and play ball. And I just remember one of the fellows that was playing for me, Bernie Neeson. He had his son Jake, and Jake was sitting in the stands, and he was about 14, 15 years old, and he was taller than I was. He was a big strap. And anyway, his dad was up to bat, and he goes, "Go, Dad! Go, Dad!" And then his dad hit a home run. And Jake jumps up and he starts jumping up and down. He's going, "That's my daddy! That's my daddy! That's my daddy!" He was sort of acting goofy. But you know what? That's what the scripture says. The glory of sons is their father. When you stop and think about what's happening in the Gospels, is Jesus, all the way through the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus is pointing to the Father and saying, "That's my daddy, that's my daddy, that's my daddy." That's what Jesus is doing. If you see me, you've seen the Father. Okay? It's daddy, it's Father, Abba, Father. What's interesting is you go to the epistles, and the Father's going, "That's my son, that's my son, that's my son," all the way through the epistles. Just think about it. Think about it as you're studying the scriptures. Yeah. What is a wound? What's a wound? A wound is any unresolved issue where a lack of closure adversely impacts and shapes the direction and dynamics of a man's life now. Any unresolved issue where the lack of closure affects the dynamics and direction of a man's life now. You see, an unhealed wound is a festering mass. It's a source of infection. It's pain and it's reaction. You see, when a wound heals, and I've got lots of scars, being a mechanic most of my life, you're pulling on a wrench and all of a sudden it slips and you put a gouge and a gash and you know what? It can hurt horrible for a while. But after a while, it heals. And so now you're looking, well, there's a scar there. And you can touch the scar, and it no longer hurts. It's just a reminder of what happened. Okay? And your memory will always remember the things of the past, but you know they'll no longer be painful. A healed wound becomes a scar, and it no longer is a source of trouble. The absent father wound is what we want to look at. It's either physically absent from us or emotionally distant from us. Defined, it's this. It's an ongoing emotional, social, or spiritual deficit, ordinarily met in a healthy relationship with dad, that must now be overcome by other means. So how do we overcome it? Well, there's answers. Some of the things we have been doing is coping. We cope by, and we'll talk about this down the road, but you know, first of all, we blame, deny, and excuse. And then sometimes we use medication. We become workaholics or sportsaholics or drinkaholics or drugaholics or whatever. You know, we simply go that direction. We try to deal with it in other ways. There's correct and there's right answers. I'd like to have you do a quick exercise right now. You got a pen and paper in your hand? Just go off to the side. I'd like to give you an exercise. When you think of dad, your dad, write down the first three words that come to your mind. When you think of dad, just write down the first three words that describe your dad, that you think of when you think of dad. I'll just be quiet for a little bit. First three words. When you think of those words, what do they tell you? Do they speak to you? Do they tell you a story? Do they say something? You know, when I wrote those three words down, and I did, I have them in front of me here. Number one, I wrote down loner. My dad was a loner. poor relationships with other adults. Neat man, he had a great relationship with most children, but poor relationship with adults. He was a loner, full of hurt. Next thing I wrote down was failure. Financial failure. Other ways too. He could never complete a project. He had built-in defeat. He could do anything. He was sharp. He was smart. He was very capable. I watched him do things other people couldn't do, but he had this built-in defeat problem. Third thing I wrote down was unconditional love. Boy, I am so grateful for my dad's unconditional love. I never wondered whether my dad loved me. That's something many of you might not have. That was wonderful to have. I always felt that my daddy loved me. Never had a question that. And that's something that's delightful. So I had two negatives and a positive. I don't know what you wrote down, but think about it. Okay? The result of an absent father wound, anger and pain is probably number one. Anger and pain that springs out of somewhere, maybe nowhere, just seemingly nowhere, but it's connected somewhere. Look what Ephesians 6:4 says. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Don't provoke your children to wrath. Tell you what, I deal with lots of hurting people, and oftentimes it's a dad that created a lot of problems. I talked to a young lady yesterday, and she told me, she said, I had a talk with my dad. And she told me some of the things that her dad said to her, and I'm just going, oh, oh, oh. He was simply telling her words of huge amount of pain, huge amount of hurt, total rejection. Words that were just so painful that she didn't know what to do with them. What do you do with that? What do you do with that? Pain and anger. Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath. And as a dad, we need to be so, so careful of that. Colossians 3:21, fathers, do not provoke your children that they may lose heart. Okay? It's so easy for our children to get discouraged because of the way we communicate with them. We're oftentimes the cause of anger in our children. Dig around to see if what we're doing to our children is rooted in what our dad did to us. So often it is. So often it is. Don't assign blame, but there's always a cause. I have a quote here by James Toney. I don't know if you know who he was. He was a middleweight boxing champ. Now listen to his words. He says this. He says, I fight with anger. My dad did my mom wrong. He made her work two jobs and he left his responsibilities behind. And I can never forgive him for that. I hope my father reads this article, for if he ever decides to come out of the woodwork, I'll be ready for him. Everything I do in the ring is about that. I'll be ready for him. I look at my opponent and I see my dad, so I take it out on my opponent. Think we could be doing that? I'll do anything I have to get my dad out of there. And he was a boxing champ. Beating the crap out of his opponent because it was dad. He looked at that man all the time as, that's dad. And he nailed him. What drives you? What drives us? Sometimes it's hidden back in the background. We don't know what's going on there. That's anger. That's pain, you see. That didn't justify any of Tony's actions, but it does explain why it was happening. The next thing is extreme behavior or addictions or obsessions. If you're struggling with moral failure, drugs, alcohol, workaholism, if something is obsessive in your life, dig deep to see if it's rooted there. There's a reason why men are plastered all over the news media in anger and violence and immorality. How many of you saw the news in the last 2-3 weeks about that pastor from Lebanon, accused of murdering his second wife, and highly suspicious of murdering his second wife, and having an affair with the man who committed suicide in his church, with the wife of the man who committed suicide. I mean, and you know what? One of our sales reps sings in the quartet with him, comes into our shop. He says, I can't believe it. He was a good man. Boy, there was something wrong, wasn't there? There was something horribly, horribly wrong. These connections don't get dealt with by covering the pipe back up and letting all that garbage down there. How many of us have said, I'll never do that again. I'll never look at that again. And a few weeks later, a few days later, back in the same rut, I'll never get that angry again. And a few months, we're violently angry again. Thirdly, there's an inner sense of lostness or incompleteness. If your dad was absent, this exists in your life. Most of you have heard of Burt Reynolds, the actor. I'd like to read what he says. He says, my dad was a police chief. When he came into a room, all the light and the air went out of it. Between my dad and me, we never hugged, never kissed, never said I love you. No, we never even cried together. Later, I was always looking for someone to say, hey, Burt, you're grown up now. I approve of you, and I love you, and you don't have to do these things anymore. But that never happened, and I was lost inside. And for most of my life, I didn't connect. I was incomplete. I didn't know then what I needed to know. You see, men, dig. This is fixable. This is repairable. And we're going to find it. We're going to get there, but it must be uncovered, must be revealed. You got to tell the truth about the past before you can ever deal with it. So dig till you find it. Homosexuality. Well, now you're saying, oh, I'm out of here. That's not me, so I must not have the father wound. Well, this is just one of the things that can be there. It's a fracturing a relationship with a same-sex parent. I'm seeing it way too often in people and dealing with issues. The reasons today that homosexuality is the reasons that society gives is that it's a genetic disposition. It's the way we're born. It's the way we're made. No, not at all. Elizabeth Mosley did an Oxford University study, and she said homosexuality is a fracture of the relationship with the parent of the same sex. At an adult level, it becomes a vain, eroticized attempt to recover that fracture. And you know, if this wound is in our lives, we'll attempt to solve it one way or another. My father's been missing in my life. I'll fill the gap in one way or another. And most of all, most if not all, of homosexuality depends upon difficulties in that parent-child relationship, especially in the early years of life, especially a son to a father, mother to a daughter. And regardless of man or woman, they have suffered some deficit in that relationship. And later on, they try to make it up in a same-sex or homosexual relationship as an adult. What is it that every son wants and needs from his dad? Time together. We long for time together with our fathers. It's interesting, my dad worked away a lot, so he was gone a lot. But you know, there's something that I really admire about my dad. He did make some strong and powerful attempts to spend time with us boys. And there's some things he did and that make memories that I won't ever forget. Every Easter, he took us to Washington, D.C., and he used to work in Washington, D.C. He was worked for the Department of Agriculture. And he would take us there and take us through lots of the buildings, and we'd end up at the airport, we'd end up at the zoo. That's where us boys wanted to go when we were smaller anyway. And I remember him taking us down there one time on July 4th, and we sat at the base of the Washington Monument and watched the fireworks. They were the most awesome fireworks I could ever imagine. And July 4th is my birthday, so that was, you know, that's just a memory that just, it's right there, and it's a great memory. But there's even a stronger one that sticks in my mind with my dad. And talking about fathers spending time with their sons, my dad was not a hunter. I can't remember him getting a hunting license. He had two sons who were fanatics about hunting. Frank and I, we thought hunting was the only thing there was to do. And I remember my dad taking off work and standing out in the woods with us boys in freezing cold weather, and he's standing there without a gun. And he would stay there as long as we wanted to be there. I'll tell you what, that makes an impression on me. I won't forget that. Because you know what? The last thing he wanted to do was be sitting in the woods with nothing to do, standing there with no gun, freezing. Us boys, we could deal with it because we anticipated a deer coming along. He wasn't anticipating a deer coming along. Do you know what? He was anticipating that his sons were getting a tremendous amount of enjoyment out of this. And he knew he was there for us in those times. That just makes a huge impact on my life without a gun so his boys could stand out in the cold with a gun. Life skills. Life skills. Our children need life skills. You know, we're not passing on some of the very important things in life. How are our children going to know how to handle finances if we as fathers don't handle finances well? Or maybe we handle finances very well, but we don't teach our sons how to develop good financial habits. We need to pass on life skills. What about relational skills? How are they supposed to learn how to deal with the women in their life if they see their dad being angry with their mom and impatient with their mom and not understanding with their mom? How are our sons supposed to learn life skills in relational areas if they see dad messing up? Just life skills and dealing with life in general, making wise choices, spending time, doing the right thing. In fact, the scriptures tell us, train up a child in the way he should go. Another version says, in the way that child is bent. Okay? In other words, every child isn't the same. We sort of sometimes treat our children as multiples and we just deal with them all the same. But you know what? God says, no, each son, each child has a different personality, a different disposition, a different bent, and we're supposed to deal with them. Train up in a child in the way he should go, not the way we want them to go. We know that they should go in the way of the Lord, but you know what? Neither my children were interested in becoming power equipment businessmen. And so they aren't, even though I wanted them to be. And I tried to get them to be, but they're not. Train up the child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. If we train them the deep things about life and the things that are important about life, it'll stick with them. It'll stick with them. A son needs to be taught how to do life together. Directions with solid answers to why questions. Children ask why? Well, about the age of two, they get diarrhea of the mouth. And one of the questions they start asking is why? Why? You tell them something and they go, why? Well, you have to say, oh, shut up and do it. Okay? But, you know, our children will keep on having why questions and they might not even ask them. And you know, we're adding a session this year, and I'm excited about it. Scared and excited about it. It's called The Intentional Journey, A Father Helping His Son Move from Boyhood to Manhood. That's going to be down the road. Because you see, our children, our sons are going to have, and our daughters are going to have questions about, Dad, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling when puberty hits and those hormones start kicking in and start moving him from a child to an adult? And you know what? That's all that's going to happen. He's going to move from a child to adult. He will not move from a boy to a man unless his dad helps him get there. That's why we have grown-up children, boys in men's bodies, instead of having men in men's bodies. We talked about that last week. Okay, we're going to talk about the intentional journey. Men, hopefully we'll have a handout or so that'll help us help our children become men. Maybe our grandchildren become men. Directions with solid answers to why questions. Deuteronomy 6:6-7, and these words which I am commanding you today, God saying, shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Is there any time in between that? That pretty well covers it all, doesn't it, men? It covers it all. We're to be communicating with our sons about the real issues in life. How about convictions through modeling? Don't just tell me. Show me by the way you live. Show me by the way you live. What's your life like? How are you living your life in front of your children? What are your children seeing, Dad? That's huge. It's huge. How do your children see you handle very difficult situations? Pressure, tension. They see you blow up or they see you grow up. What do they see? Listen to what Paul says. Now, just think about, okay, let's read it first. You're witnesses and so is God. How devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behave toward you believers. Paul's saying, you could see how we walked in front of you. We had a tent-making industry. We didn't just live off of your money. We earned our own way. We lived faultlessly, blamelessly. We weren't doing things crooked behind your back. You could see that we were clear in front of you. Just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each of you as a father would his own children. Dad has some responsibility. And do you know what Paul's saying? This is how I live my life before you. Now listen. Paul was one of the most wounded men there ever was. Paul had this, I don't know, a missing father wound. Gamaliel was there. But you know, watch how Paul grew up. He grew up with a zeal for God, but it wasn't according to what, it wasn't according to the knowledge. It wasn't according to bless the church. In fact, he was breathing, Acts says he was breathing threatenings. He was seeing that men were killed and put in prison because they believed in Jesus, because they believed in the gospel. And so you see this man who was so harsh and so hard and so callous, and he could stand there and hold the coats while Stephen's being stoned, and he could see men in prison, and he could send the officials out to arrest people, and maybe he was even part of it. And then you move to this. Something took place, didn't it? He had an experience with Jesus. He had his heart healed and heart changed completely and totally. He says, "Ah, I treated you as a father would his sons, his children." That's how God wants us to be. He wants us to be healed so that we treat others just like Paul treated the church. Our children want Dad's heart. Children want to hear us say, "I love you. I'm proud of you. This is what you're good at." Just recently, there was a young girl, and I wanted to get this in writing, and I asked my wife to copy down. I didn't get it in time, so I don't have it with me. I wanted to read it to you. But there was a young girl who was really going through a rebellious time, and it was really challenging. She's a sharp young lady, attractive young lady, but she was going through some real rebellious times in her life. And it was interesting, her dad sat her down. And her dad said to her, and he calls her by name, he says, "I just want you to know, you're going through a difficult time right now. But I want you to know that I love you. And I also want to know that I believe in you. And I know that you're going to walk through this, and you're going to come out the other end okay. I trust you, and I believe in you, and I love you." And this girl's own testimony from her own lips says that is what turned her around and moved her back in the right direction. On the opposite, that young lady I talked to yesterday, her dad told her, "You're not welcome in our home. Don't show up here anymore. I don't want you around. I won't come to visit you either." Okay. Which one do you think is going to win? Which one's going to pass on difficult things to their children and their children? What's going to make the difference? And you know that first one who told his daughter, "I believe in you and I love you," guess what? His dad had abandoned him when he was young. But he learned some things, and he wasn't going to repeat the same garbage. He made a difference. He healed. What are we going to do? What are you going to do? We have choices to make, men. Let's dig down. Let's get to the bottom of this. Listen to the words of Father. This is what God said to his son. "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." Listen to him. He has something to say. All of our sons, all of our daughters need to hear dads say this, speak this into their lives. Now listen, they also need our discipline. They also need our correction. But if all we do is discipline and correct, and we never affirm, and we never tell them and let them know that we believe in them and love them and care for them, they're not going to make it. Many of you are sitting here now, and you just wished you could have heard your dad say these words to you. My wife just told me the other day when I asked her to write those words down, she goes, "I just wish I had a daddy who could say those words to me." My wife said that. And so as a husband, I need to keep telling her, "I believe in you. I love you. You can do it." Here's a letter. Listen to this. This is pretty poignant. "My father was killed in World War II when I was 3 years old. I knew in my heart that he loved me. My mother told me that he loved me, but I always longed to hear it for myself from him. When my mother and my stepfather retired to Alaska, I came over one day to help them pack. Mom took an old photograph of my father in his army uniform from off the dresser and gave it to me and said, 'Here, this is for you. I know your father would have wanted you to have it.' It was the same photograph I'd seen for years. As I took it from her, I accidentally dropped it, and the cheap frame broke. And as I reached down to pick up the shattered glass with a sinking heart, this family treasure, behind the photograph I found a letter placed there 37 years before and long since forgotten. It was a letter from my father to me. His 3-year-old son. It was the last letter he had written before he died. In it, he said that he loved me and that he longed to come home and be with me. Unbelievably, I finally heard the words I had longed to hear from my dad. You have the opportunity to say those kind of words to your son now, your daughter now. Well, they can hear it. You might not be able to hear it from your dad, but next week we'd like to bring a handout. It's called Healing the Father Wound. It's called Having a Correct View of Father. And I'll go over that with you next week and give you some homework to do to heal a father wound. Maybe your dad, maybe you never heard this from your dad, but we'd like you to hear it from the real dad, the Father of Light. As you go into small group, there's some powerful things for you to consider. First of all, maybe you could talk about what are the 3 words that you wrote down when you remembered your dad. Which of any of the 4 results of the absent father wound would you most identify with and why? And thirdly, it's huge. If you could ask one thing of your dad and get it, what would it be? Thank you, man.
Thank you, Jason, for being open and sharing. Men, if this has gripped you, this is not just silly stuff. This is stuff that every man needs. Every man needs to hear. And I trust that you will have the courage to take this journey. I would really encourage you, as you go into your small group, to open up. Also, on page 92 in your book, is a manhood template. As you start digging some of this stuff out, just start jotting some stuff down there. As far as graduating, that's the only requirement, is that as you complete that manhood plan. I just really encourage you to start jotting some of that stuff down as you start reflecting. And like Jason said, at this point, don't try to fix it. Just start digging. So thank you. If this is your first time here, we have a welcome small group that meets right up here in the front benches. And trust that you'll enjoy that. The rest of you, you are dismissed to your small group.